Hi, I'm here with Dr. John Bass. He's a pulmonologist intensivist in the New York City area, and he's been covering the ICU this week, seeing a lot of COVID-19 patients, and I thought it would be valuable to get some feedback from him on what's going on and just ask some questions that I know a lot of listeners are interested in hearing. Disclaimer, Dr. Bass is my husband, so thank you, John, for agreeing to do this.
Great to be here.
We've been quarantined, so he has no choice. So my first question is, just kind of walk us through what's going on from the minute a patient is admitted to the ICU. Granted, I know you're seeing the sickest of the patients, and my intention for this is definitely not to scare anyone who's listening to this, but I kind of also wanted to give just kind of a day in the life of what's going on with the ICU staff and what determines a patient being admitted to the ICU. Are there specific criteria that you're looking for?
Well, we're getting called by both the emergency room and to patients who've already been admitted to the regular medical floors who are having trouble primarily with the breathing. If their oxygen level is low, or if they're requiring an escalating dose of oxygen to keep them comfortable, or if they're lethargic or having very labored breathing, then those are the primary things that we're getting called on to evaluate. And if we think that they're headed in the wrong direction, then we bring them down to the ICU for more advanced care.
Interesting. And are you finding that you're intubating patients at a little bit of a lower threshold than you normally would, for example, in, say, a flu infection?
In general, I mean, I think the general feeling is to be aggressive with escalation of care. If someone needs to be on a ventilator, then don't play around and wait a long time. Get them on the ventilator quickly.
Interesting. Interesting. And I'm assuming that's because of what corona actually does to the lungs. I mean, I'm going to speak about ARDS a little bit, acute respiratory distress syndrome. And if maybe you can talk us through and tell us, is this why patients are decompensating maybe at a little bit of a faster rate? And can you tell us a little bit about the mechanism of how it affects the lungs?
So the lungs are an organ in the body that are very susceptible to having this very violent, vigorous, inflammatory process. A lot of diseases can do it to the lungs, but particularly coronavirus is doing it, where the lungs are getting very inflamed and damaged to a degree in some patients, not all, but some. And in those patients, they can deteriorate quickly. So aggressive maneuvers to support their oxygen, meaning bring them to the ICU, put them on higher doses or different types of oxygen or mechanical ventilation is what's being done.
And is there any specific thing that the inflammatory response is doing to the alveoli that's causing this?
Well, I mean, I think in general, as the lungs get more inflamed, they get stiffer, they get more saturated with fluids, and those sort of physiologic changes that occur in these sort of disease processes are what makes it hard to breathe and hard to oxygenate patients, and that's what we're seeing.
And if someone is at home sick, because I know that I would probably say, and please correct me if I'm wrong, more than 90% of the cases are either mild or asymptomatic. So if someone's listening and they're kind of having symptoms, but they're not sure, should I go to the ER? Should I go to the hospital? What should I do? What are symptoms that you would say to someone, you know what, maybe you should come in and have that evaluated? Are there specific things that we should look for at home if someone's not feeling well at home?
Yeah, I mean, I think that high fevers are signs that you're sick. I think that a worsening respiratory status, meaning labored breathing, persistent coughing, wheezing, chest tightness, those are all things that are concerning and would warrant prompt attention. I think you also have to take into consideration your own personal health. If you have a lot of heart disease or diabetes or other issues, then you're going to want to see attention quicker.
And it's interesting that you're saying your own health. So my understanding is that obviously the elderly are more at risk, or anyone who's immunocompromised. Is that what you're seeing in the ICU? Are you seeing the majority of patients in that zone of patients, or are you seeing varied patients?
I think we're seeing a fair number that are falling into that older, more compromised, more comorbidity sort of patient. We are seeing some younger and healthier people. It's sort of a mix, but I think the numbers are probably more skewed towards the older, sicker patients. I think it's early in this whole process, and I think when things play out over weeks and months, I think those numbers will get easier to kind of take get a read on.
And do you feel like we're at our peak now, or do you think it's going to get a little bit worse, or really you can't tell?
It's kind of hard to know. Yeah. I think it's hard to know. I mean, I think that you know, the peak still could be you know, a little bit off. You know, I don't think we really know.
And in terms of the flu, because I know you see a lot of flu patients usually during this time, outbreak season, and you see a lot of patients who do get really sick and decompensate. What would you say is the survival rate in comparison with the flu and the COVID-19 based on what we know right now and the numbers that we have in the U.S. and maybe globally, if you know?
Well, I think that, flu is a very severe disease, and flu can do, you know, severe illness like this. People can get severely ill and can die, and people do die every year with the flu. I think right now a lot of these COVID patients are the sicker ones can be sicker sometimes. So I think there is some increased severity over the flu, but I think in general the numbers are hard to pin down.
Right now. What I was understanding was that the flu mortality every year is about 0.1%, and the corona in the U.S. is around 1%, and globally about 5%.
Yeah, I think those are numbers that I've seen as well, and that's at the moment where the numbers stand, I think.
And I think partly the problem is, and this is obviously why we're all in isolation and quarantine, but part of the problem is the contagion factor of the coronavirus versus the flu. And from my understanding is, I guess epidemiologists assign each virus a R-naught number, which determines how contagious a virus is. And I think part of the problem is that there's so many people that are walking around that are asymptomatic or have mild disease, and so they don't think they're that contagious. But for example, like the flu is given an R-naught of 1. So for example, if you have the flu, usually you develop symptoms right away. You might be able to infect one other person. That person might infect another person. So that's where you get that naught, N-A-U-G-H-T number of 1. Whereas corona, COVID-19 has been assigned an R-naught of 3, meaning that you could be asymptomatic or very mild, spread it to 3 people, and then those 3 people spread it to 9, and then 9 to 27, etc. So I guess that's probably what's causing all the fear and panic, but we do have to remember the survival rates, which are not really that low. I mean, they're pretty good still, so it's something that's reassuring. But I did want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on in terms of also equipment. Are you given the proper equipment? Are you guys okay in terms of ventilators? What's going on with that? Because we're also hearing a lot of things on the news about that and shortages.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the equipment is there and it's being used. I think there is efforts to conserve equipment. You know, we don't want to be wasteful with masks and gloves and gowns and so forth. But I haven't been faced with any personal situations where I lacked or seen nurses or other doctors sort of lack personal equipment. You know, obviously people are fearful for the future and where this may go in the coming weeks or months. But I think at the moment things are there and things are being used properly.
In terms of ventilators, is it the same thing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I haven't personally had any problems with getting respiratory equipment.
And just so we know, you have, I think, 4 units at your hospital, and each one has around 10 beds.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, out of those 10, for example, like a unit you're covering, are all the patients intubated in the unit, or how many patients are intubated? How many ventilators do you have in that one unit?
No, they're not all intubated. I'm not sure the exact number, maybe 50-60% or so.
Okay.
And
the majority of your patients, are they older, younger, pre-existing conditions? I know that there was some talk about males being more likely to suffer more severe illness, and they're attributing that to the fact that maybe men, especially men over 50, are not as healthy as women. They don't eat as well as women do. They smoke, they drink a little bit more alcohol. And so have you seen that at all in the unit where it's mainly confined to that certain demographic, or have you seen a varied number of cases?
I think it's a mix, but I have heard that thought about men too, and I think you're probably right. There does seem to be a higher predominance of men. You know, whether or not it's exactly for, you know, what reason, it's hard to say still. But that may be the case. It may be that more smoking or more alcohol use or obesity or things like that are the triggers.
And what are the most common symptoms that somebody would experience when they're having COVID-19 versus, for example, a cold or a flu? Or is it hard to tell?
Well, I think, unfortunately, it's hard to tell. And that's probably part of the problem that we're experiencing. It is hard to tell. People are walking around with a cold and they think they have COVID and vice versa. But I think in general, I think in the flu, you do hear a lot more of GI problems, although you can get nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea and stuff with COVID. But I think there's more of that with the regular flu. Cold is more stuffy nose and maybe a headache and sinus congestion and stuff like that. So I mean, it's the dry, predominantly dry cough, shortness of breath, fever. Those are the things that are people really sort of cluing in on.
So if someone's at home with a dry cough and fever for a few days, what do you recommend?
Yeah, you ought to talk to your doctor and consider getting evaluated, maybe even tested. I know the testing criteria is varied, and there's a lot. It's changing almost every day. You know, whether or not you've been exposed or you've been traveling or different risk factors.
Risk factors also.
You know, your personal doctor could sort of make those decisions. But yeah, it's worth getting checked out.
And one last question. I know I've asked you this before, but I found it interesting, so I figured I'd ask again so that our listeners can hear. So can I just walk me through what you guys are doing in terms of taking precautions, gear going in the hospital and gear leaving the hospital? Because I know that you've been a little bit more, protective about bringing home anything, but obviously also being protective in the hospital. So just tell me a little bit about what you guys do on a daily basis, because I know it's a routine.
Yeah, I think just even being more vigilant than normal about what you're bringing into the hospital and what you're bringing home at when you leave the hospital, meaning, you know, bags and stuff, leave it at home if you don't need it. You know, just bring a pen and what you need in the hospital. Surgical scrubs are being used a lot more. Putting on a clean set of clothes when you go into the hospital and taking them off. When it's time to go home and having a spare set of clothes and shoes and everything that people are changing. When you're seeing patients and working with patients, gloves and masks, gowns and face shields and goggles are being used. People are being very cautious and careful and looking out for one another too. If you see someone is going into a room and they forgot to put the mask on, then people have eyes on you and are telling you to stop.
I heard you guys have a buddy system where one person makes sure that the other person is doing all the precautions before they go into the room. Are you still doing that? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's not like a set sort of format, but yeah, I think everyone is sort of looking out for everyone else and their signs and so forth, you know, what to do, take this off, then put this on and so on and so forth. So yeah, you just got to be vigilant and cautious.
And I think a lot of people want to also know, like, what about family visiting? That must be hard because obviously if you're in isolation and you're infected, you can't have family members. So has that been hard for a lot of your patients?
Yeah, I think a lot of hospitals are limiting or not allowing visitors at all, pretty much. Limited sort of visitors. So visitors are not sort of coming into a lot of the hospitals. Every mm-hmm. hospital has different policies. I'm sure that's a lot scarier for family members, and for that reason, I've been trying to reach out and call family members as much as we can, just to let them know what's going on with their loved ones. But every hospital is different, and
might be worth maybe having them do like FaceTime calls or something like that with family members. I think it's probably helpful for patients.
For the patients who are that's a good idea. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time you took.
Oh, no problem. No, thanks.